Welcome back to Generational Sense, where we make sense of building generational wealth. And today we're going to be discussing emergency funds. So I know they're very important. Many of us have heard of them. But what exactly are they? How much should we have in them? And you know, how can we balance that with the other funds that we've got coming in? So, Dad, if you would like to start us off with explaining a little bit about what exactly is an emergency fund for those who don't know, and why is it important to have one?
All right. Well, Nate, the idea when we get started out in life, we get the job, we have a little money coming in, is that we want to become disciplined about saving for things that are important to us. One of those big things, of course, is retirement, because when we reach that age that we don't want to work anymore, we want to have a way to provide for ourselves that maintains our lifestyle, and Social Security in general is not going to do that. And right. So we want to be able to save and invest for retirement. We want to be able to save and invest for that new home that we want to purchase. We want to be able to plan vacations and all of these fun things, these great things that we want to enjoy in our lives. So the purpose of an emergency fund is to make it so that when we have unexpected expenses that are urgent and necessary to pay for right now, because putting things off would be costly to our health or costly to a family member's ability to maintain a job or something that is truly very important in our lives, we want a place to pull funds from that will not cause us to sabotage the other good things that we're doing in our lives.
Right. And so, you know, what kind of expenses, maybe unexpected expenses are we talking about here? So what exactly qualifies as maybe an emergency versus non-urgent expense?
Let me ask you a question, Nate. Do you have a job?
I do.
Does your... I know you're sharing an apartment with someone and they provide some income towards paying the utilities and the rent and things like that. But without your help, would that be a hardship for them?
Very much so.
Okay. So we can imagine if you lost your job or you decided you hated the environment there so much that you needed to immediately look for something new and quit, then that would be a real strain on the household, wouldn't it?
Right.
Okay. So now we're getting into something that would be a good use of an emergency account, because we don't want to go take the bit that you've set up in your 401k so far or in your Roth IRA or toward that first house or toward a wedding or something that's important. And we don't want to use those funds to fund this emergency if we can help it. Now, obviously, when we're at a stage of life where we have not yet built up that emergency fund, then that's going to be the only choice, is to find the money where we can, family, the accounts that we have available to us. But the goal is with the emergency fund is to get to the point that if we were without a job for a period of time or something happened that was an extraordinary cost that was beyond what our week-to-week paycheck could cover, then we have an ability to dive in, grab that money, and fund that emergency without touching. Now, some things aren't emergencies. Like, is it an emergency that we have a Friday night get-together and we don't have a gift for the person? No. That's a situation when we need to look at our budget and decide what we can truly afford to give. And maybe we just need to write a nice note and then save the gift for another time. And most people are going to understand the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And so would you say that these funds need to be pretty liquid in case something does happen in that sense, versus maybe putting them into an investment account and then you would have to wait to sell them if you're investing in stocks and things like that? Would you say that this account generally needs to be pretty liquid so you can just pull from it as quickly as you can?
I love this comment. You've hit upon a very important aspect of emergency funding and planning, and that is that emergency funds should be money that you can access immediately, you know, within 24 hours. And so the most popular place to keep emergency funds are in a savings account. That way they're not part of your everyday checking. You're not going to dip in them for things that are not emergencies, but it can be, you know, within 24 hours, you can transfer that money from the savings account or money market account over to that checking account, or just, you know, create cash for yourself that you can pay those emergency expenses with. So I love that comment, and that is you're in tune with the right way of thinking about it there, that in your life you're going to have different pots of money that are being stored in different places. You're going to have the everyday expenses being stored in that checking account. You're going to have, and that credit card bill will be paid out of that checking account if you're using credit to, you know, in between, you know, each time that that bill comes due. And then you're going to have that pot of money that's for emergencies. And that's usually an interest-bearing account, because you're going to build it up to a certain amount. And we can talk about that in a minute, how much. But it's going to be a substantial amount of money that can make enough in terms of interest on it that it matters. Why give that away? And so you're going to want it to be in a good interest-bearing account. And, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about, you know, setting up our checking account and what bank to choose. Right. And there we talked about how different banks pay different rates. Well, you may actually decide that you want to have your savings account at a different bank. If you've chosen the bank locally, for instance, a lot of banks pay next to nothing on their, savings accounts. Especially your big major banks like Bank of America and Chase and Citibank and, you know, Wells Fargo. They do offer some more competitive savings account, but you really need to look carefully and ask for them and make sure you're in there. And then sometimes they'll have minimums and things like that. But, you know, build this up, find a savings account that pays a really, you know, competitive rate. You can shop that on different websites and find out, you know, what those are. I think bankrate.com has a comparison of the going rates. And then you and I discussed when we were talking about setting up checking is maybe using a cash management or money market account for your checking. If you are doing that, then you should, if you've chosen Fidelity or Vanguard or one of the more competitive companies that offer those products, then you should be getting near maximum rates that any savings account would offer. The downside of those accounts is they're not FDIC insured, but they are insured by the SBIC or some other organization. So your money's not really at risk in those accounts. Mm-hmm. They're more like a brokerage type account, investing account. And those are usually linked to investing accounts. But if, so that'd be another good place to keep that money. Usually you can move it quick enough. And in some of them, you can even have check writing privileges on the account. For instance, I have a Fidelity account that's cash management. Right now in today's environment, pays about 4.5% interest, and it has checks. You know, it has the ability for me to write checks on it. Has the ability for me to get an ATM card. Has the ability for me to transfer and wire money, you know, immediately. So,
That's something that I've explored over the past year or so. Is, you know, one, separating that account so I'm not necessarily seeing that money every day if I don't have to, so it's almost like it's not there, which we'll get into in a little bit, you know, with a question I have in a minute, but just, you know, exploring the different ways to, you know, make sure that that money is liquid, that you can pull it whenever, but also, you know, making sure that you're maximizing the money that's just sitting in that account by, you know, and looking at different interest rates on different accounts and exploring that realm as well. So let's get into a little bit of the meat of the conversation here. How much should you be putting into your emergency fund? And, you know, break that down a little bit. So, you know, maybe if we're at different stages of life, how that might look a little bit different.
Okay. So the equation's not going to look exactly the same for everyone. Here are some things to take into account. What is your lifestyle? What is your salary? What are your necessary expenses? You know, if you have a home with a mortgage and it was an expensive home, and you have a high mortgage and the utilities are higher because of the square footage, then you're going to need a much bigger emergency fund than someone who's renting a small one-bedroom apartment and right. has a low utility bill. So no one number is going to fit everyone. Also, you know, people will vary in their risk tolerance and how long they want to have their emergency fund reflect with regard to their income, their salary. So a good rule of thumb that a lot of financial planners will throw out there is about 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. Some would say that you might even look at only having 3 months if you have other substantial assets available. And you prefer to take a more aggressive stance towards investing. So, you know, those are some ideas. I tend to think in terms of about 6 months because most things that happen in life can be looked at in terms of 6 months being enough time to get back on your feet. And also because a year becomes an awful lot of money that is tied up in a way that you can't use it towards that house or that retirement or that vacation or something else. And so, you know, it's a judgment call there as to how much you want to earmark for the emergency fund, because you're right. You know, once you earmark it for that, you need to be disciplined about how it's used, or else it becomes something other than an emergency fund.
Which I was about to mention, you know, really focusing if you end up in one of these situations where you are relying on your emergency fund, maybe till you can find your next job or something of that sort, you're going to be focusing a lot on using that emergency fund for necessities. Is that correct? Just really focusing on that. Granted, you know, if you are to give yourself some leeway, if you know you have an inflated lifestyle and you've got you have the salary, you know, you could have a little bit more in there to adjust for some of that, but really focusing on the necessities with that emergency fund versus, you know, the extra spending like we talked about at the beginning of the episode.
I think you would definitely want to look at seeing how you could shrink your budget in the time of that emergency, and then set up maybe an automatic withdrawal every week, every 2 weeks from your emergency fund to fund that budget and try to stick to that during your time of crisis. If the emergency is more of a one-hit wonder, so
car accident, illness,
you know, momentary two-three week loss of employment while you're transitioning, a moving expense, you know, the car, you know, probably, you know, one of the big ones is going to be the car problem. You know, you've got to get to work, and if you don't have enough in the checking account to get that car repaired, then the emergency fund becomes the obvious place to go pull from for that necessity. So, you know, those one hit things, you just kind of keep trucking. You know, you take the money, you make life easy for yourself by paying that expense, and then you keep trucking along, refunding that emergency fund at whatever pace you decided upon originally, or amended pace, you know, which we didn't talk about that. But, you know, when you first start, you need to decide how fast you can build up this emergency fund. That needs to become a line item in the budget, and you need to pay yourself first with respect to that emergency fund. And I would say, you know, do the emergency fund before you start trying to fully fund your Roth IRA or fully fund your 401k. So take your match on that 401k. That's pretty high. That's free money. We don't want
to get the free money first.
Funding our emergency fund. So, you know, take the match, but then beyond that, let's get that emergency fund funded, and then let's turn our attention back to these other vehicles that we want to build our wealth in.
Okay. And so, what was I going to ask? I had a brain fart there.
That's all right.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, when we're talking about common mistakes that people make. I hear a lot of times when people don't have these emergency funds, what they have to turn to. And so we could talk a little bit about that, but also, you know, just maybe some other mistakes when it comes to actually funding their emergency account, or whatnot. So First thing I kind of want to mention is, you know, when you don't have that funded emergency fund, what are the typical vehicles that you're looking to that are going to end up in the wrong place for you? So I know a lot of people, you know, if they don't have the money, they have to go and take out loans or rack up credit card bills and things like that. So could you tell me a little bit, you know, explain, you know, if you don't have this emergency fund, maybe what are some of the mistakes or consequences that could come from that?
Sure. So, you know, let's imagine an investment of $10,000 that's in a Roth IRA. Let me run a quick number here. Let's say $10,000 in Roth over 30 years at 10%. So let's say you put into equities at 10%, you've got $10,000 in there. You run that. I'm going to do it in my head here because my calculator's not working. So it's going to double about every 7 years, We're talking 30 years. So it's going to double four times. So 10 and 20, and then 20 and 40, 40, 80, and then 160. So, you know, right there, if you use that $10,000 for your emergency and you pull it out of that Roth where it's growing tax-free for the rest of your time until you retire, and then you can pull it out completely tax-free in retirement, that is such a powerful tool. But and you're only allowed to put, you know, $7,000-$8,000 a year into that Roth because of the rules. And so once you get money in there, it becomes extremely valuable money. And so, you know, that $10,000 for 30 years grows to about $150,000-$160,000. Well, if you are putting your Roth on the track to give you the $2 million or so that you're going to need in retirement to pull it out at 4% at a time and then live off of it and then leave an inheritance. Well, if you pull that Roth money a few times, then, you know, you go from having, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands versus the millions that you would have had you left that money in there. So, you know, that's why we want to build enough discipline in our financial plan. And again, you know, what we're really talking about here with an emergency fund is a financial plan. If you're not at a point yet where you have developed that mental, moral fortitude that we discussed when we talked about budgeting and how tough that is and how it might need counseling, you might need a financial planner to hold your feet to the fire, hold you accountable. And if you haven't gotten to that point yet, then you're not going to make effective use of an emergency fund anyhow. More than likely, you're going to lean on credit cards, you're going to build debt, you're going to be living from paycheck to paycheck, dealing with tough financial situations. We first need to get that budget right, that lifestyle correct. And there, you know, sometimes when we're not making enough money, you know, those can be tough. And so we need to think about what do we need to do to build, you know, the right career for us, the right financial situation for us, controlling our expenses, not buying a house too big, a car too nice. These things that all go into sabotaging your ability to create an emergency fund. And every day becomes an emergency because, frankly, my dear, you just don't have enough money. and none of us want to be in that situation. All of us have been there, but all of us want to escape it and get past it. And that's where, when we start talking about emergency fund, that's what an emergency fund can do for you. When you take the time, when times are good, to get it funded over the course of a couple of years and let it build up and fully fund it, and then once it's fully funded, turn your attention to these other vehicles. Then you start to develop peace of mind knowing that these other vehicles are going to be for you, there for you in the long run, because you've got a way to cover the emergencies.
Let's talk about that a little bit more when it comes to not only affecting your bank account and, you know, your investing long term and things of that sort, but the stress and the mindset of it. How can that take a toll, or how can that benefit you to have that emergency fund there, mindset wise, compared to, you know, if you have no money there, it can be pretty stressful when those big numbers hit for an unexpected expense.
It certainly helps relieve some stress to have some money set aside. You know, when you see some things creeping up on you. You know, it can, you can have stress even if you do have an emergency fund, though. If you know you're running a tight budget,
sure,
you're running a situation where you're going to have a tough time making ends meet without using a credit card, and then next thing you know, you're looking at a situation where you want to pay off the credit card by using some of your emergency funds.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the problem is the diagnosis there indicates that there was a budget problem, and not an emergency. So that's something we have to be very careful about. So even with an emergency fund, we can encounter stresses in life. I know for me, you know, I'll make an admission here, I always had a psychological barrier against just putting that money aside in an emergency fund and not investing it and taking risk with it. And so that's a demon I fight, is taking risk with the emergency money instead of clearly delineating that separate pot of money. And that is important, and it is something that if you that we all need to grow up and do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think just about anybody would much prefer to be able to take that amount of money, you know, that 6 months or so, and just see it grow in an investment account or something like that. But the realistic aspect of it is, you know, you don't know what can happen. It could be a big medical expense or something come up. And, you know, it's great that money's been growing for you in investments, but, you know, for all you know, you need that money to be liquid, or, you know, you wish you wouldn't have touched it because maybe the market went down or something of that sort, and, you know, you didn't have as much as you originally put in there. And so you just never know. And so it's very interesting to kind of talk about that, because that is a big barrier. It's for me as well, because that's something that, you know, I don't have as much money in my emergency account yet as I would like, compared to my investment accounts, where still not as much as I would like at the moment, but you know, things like my wedding and things like that have changed my you know, peripheral vision of what I'm going to put my money towards. And so it's really difficult to make that connection and make that choice to just go ahead and set aside, you know, even if it's a small increment of money towards that account versus others. So that was a good point.
You're experiencing the demons, Nate.
Yeah.
I encourage you to reprioritize that emergency fund.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, set it right now. You do have some expenses, I know, that you've got to be setting aside of money for as well, mm-hmm. that are not an emergency. And so, you know, I think in the order of priority of things, you want to take your match and then budget for the things you know you've got coming up that you have to budget for. And then whatever you can afford to, you know, you've got a number that you are going to set for that emergency fund. Let's say it's 6 months of income and you've got $100,000 of income coming into the into your life. And you know, that would be $50,000 that you want in that emergency fund. If you want to back it down to the after-tax income, you know, say $80,000 maybe, then that's $40,000 you want in that emergency fund. And just believe me, even though I had the same demons, believe me when I say, if you've got that set aside and you always replenish it when you do have to dip into it, and then all those other things you want to do, saving for the car, saving for the house, saving for retirement, you know, become a lot easier, because you know, because in that emergency, you've got a place to immediately get the money you need to fund that thing. And then you've got an easy way to plug that back into the budget to replenish it over the course of whatever amount of time it takes, depending on how big the emergency was. And so it is a very sound, it's a more sound way of thinking about getting to that point in life where you're investing versus just starting to throw money into investments haphazardly.
Yeah.
You know, you know, this harkens back for me to many mistakes that were made financially that, you know, if I had had my dad speaking to me the way I'm speaking to you now and had done things just a little bit different, just tweaked some things, then, you know, it would have made millions of dollars in difference over the long run.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, that's all I had for this week. More of a more simplistic episode, but I just kind of wanted to dig into that. Obviously, you know, I've I've got to start making those decisions to go ahead and put that money, you know, in that account versus, you know, trying to invest it and make big moves with it. Yeah. Or
right
retirement
now, 4.5% is not bad.
No. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's all I've got for this week. And I'm looking forward to next week. Got some interesting topics I want to go over. But that'll conclude episode 4 of Generational Sense.
All right. Enjoy talking with you, Nate.
Enjoy talking with you as well, Dad. You too.